Hello and welcome to Pro U Podcast, episode number 337, Loss. This is like a little pause along the Pro U Podcast path. Cause it's like, you know, my story is what's going on, and it's great, you know, this is happening, and positive this, and great year, and, you know, I spoke with the hospice, and, you know, I'm doing these installations, and the beach stuff is going great, and Zen's healthy, and I'm healthy, and, you know, that's just like, that's, you know, I walk the earth, have experience, that's what I'm sharing. But in the midst of that, you know, I'm middle, not a lot of high highs and low lows. So I didn't get all, you know, crazy excited and have this down. I was like, okay, that happened. I delivered my message. Okay, good. Now go home and hug Zen and move forward. But what never left me, because now what I was to do and what I was going to do and how I was going to do it was gone. So what was left was, who were you talking to? Why were you talking to them? And, you know, really, what's your and Jim's relationship based on? I mean, if he said, hey, I took pictures of your art and I showed it to my wife, fantastic, have a great day. End of story. You know, so whenever I'm around Jim, I mean, 2 years is not a long time. It's very tangible, his loss. The loss, the cumulative loss at the hospice. And I think I was just, I don't know, it was like, wow, all this other stuff left, what's that? It's like, it's just, and then, you know, with Kobe and his daughter and the other seven passengers, and then Brett's email that he wrote to me about, wow, we're all in this together. I kept thinking, yeah, man, we all have lost someone or know someone who's lost someone, or, you know, it's just, we're all in this together. Thank you, Brett. But I was like, you know what, I just kind of felt like I had to do this. And I thought, I never really completely, like, researched and got the five stages of grief. So it's just kind of a cool little thing. I mean, it wasn't the funnest thing. It's not the funnest topic, but it's reality. It's part of life. Avoiding it is not a good thing, you know. You got to love yourself enough to go through some of the yucky stuff so you can feel that pain, so you can absorb it, so you can grow through it. And again, this stuff is just, it's not always fun, people. And that's what I'm saying. If you're not the best you, if you're not deeming yourself worthy, how much harder is all this stuff? Whew, I don't even want to think about that. So this is, you know, just, I just felt like I kind of wanted to do it, needed to do it, had to do it. And so I did, because that's how the sinister minister, Reverend Tommy D. Rolls. So I hope you are well. I hope 2020 is going well for you. I thank you for being the listeners of my Pro U podcast. And enjoy this episode. Hello, beautiful people, my Pro U people. It's time, 337 weeks of the Pro U podcast. Coming up on the anniversary, 5 years. It's pretty cool, just to say. So, a couple things I'm going to chat about, and then I'm going to focus on the topic of a loss. So after the amazing moment I had at the Camarillo Hospice, and just everything that's been going on, it's just been, you know, a great year. I've done one speaking engagement, and this week I do my first installation. I've never done either one of those, and I've done, you know, one of each already this year, and it's, you know, just the end of February. So a lot of, you know, positive energy flowing along my pro-you path. But it stuck with me. There's just this thing when I left the hospice. It's like, you know, you want to do good and you want people to like you and you want to have an impact. You know, you want all that. And then, like I said, I got in the car. I drove back. It's like, look, that's you and there's your dog and you have a good life and be happy and be thankful. So it went back to that. But there was just this lingering thing of loss. And then, you know, Brett's email was just fantastic. And it was like, you know, we're all in this thing together. And I'm like, you know, it's just so true, because it's like, who do you know that hasn't dealt with loss, that doesn't know someone? I mean, there's a ton of different degrees. It's all relative, but loss, you know, causes us to grieve, and it is a funky time. And, you know, and I saw Jim chat with him a couple more times, and he's just a energetic, outgoing guy. You know, he's retired, but he's just, you know, go, go, do, do. And I'm like, man, he should just be with his partner. You know, I mean, that's what you think. You're like, wow, this guy's, and you know that's what he wanted more than anything. And it just, I don't know, it just stuck with me to the point where I was like, you know what? I just want to do one on loss and, you know, what people go through. So, again, it was a very cool thing for me to kind of Google and research, and I'm glad I did. But first, so I had this client, and he said two things, and it was just this great one session. I trained him a long time. Great dude. Never given up, but he struggled with weight loss. Better between the ears, quieted the nose, you know, just the noise, you know, he's just his perspective. He is a better version of him by far. And the last little thing is the weight loss. And it's not so much, oh, you need to lose weight because you're overweight. It's like, that's that last thing you're not quite in control of between your ears. It's like, I made that food. That's the food that's in the fridge. That's the food I packed. That's the food I brought. That's the food I made because I am worth it. That's a level. He's done everything else, but just really gotten to where he can see that's the last thing. And I keep telling him, I go, you know, it's not, oh, you lost weight, you finally are, you know, good. It's you controlling that area of your life. Now, the byproduct of that will be weight loss, but it's not about you losing weight. It's about you choosing and controlling what and when and how much you put into your mouth. You know, it's a sign. Like, oh, sorry. Oh, sorry. Oh. It's a sign of something. You're, you know, little, you know, not great at portion control, a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, just, you're never going to lose weight. Someone has to lose, you have to go, okay, I might have a cheat day or I'm not going to have any cheat days at all. And you got to be strict. I mean, you really got to change what you're doing to lose weight. It's hard. It is really hard to lose weight. And you can lose a couple pounds, you can gain them back, and you can fluctuate, and you can just sit there for years, as my client has. So he made this comment. He said, you know, my wife was really focused on helping her mother with this thing. And he goes, part of me understood it, but part of me was just really frustrated because she was so, you know, all of her energy was going into that. And he said, I just know we have so many more important things to deal with right now, to focus on. And so I asked, I said, so why do you think your wife is doing that? Kind of paused and thought. I said, well, I'll answer that. It's just way easier to work on other people, focus on other people, help other people than work on ourselves. It just is. So if you're struggling like with a job or getting something done or getting organized or working on your stuff, cleaning your stuff, eating right, getting organized, being pro you, it's like, oh, I'll help that person over there. And then I went, that's just like you. He looked at me. I went, here you are, really focused on what your wife is doing. It's got nothing to do with you. And you have so many more things to focus on and work on. And he just like, boom. But it was great to see that because it's not right, wrong, good, bad. It's like, hey, people are married, spouses are tough. Oh, I wish they wouldn't do that. That's fine. But if you're staring at one action and it's just sitting in your head, you're like, I don't understand it and it's frustrating. It's like, why are you doing that? What's that got to do with you? If someone else's actions are in your head, it means you're not thinking about you. It's not this selfish thing. It's working on you. I really focused on that. I felt like I did it my whole life, but the last 6 years, it's all I've done. And it's time consuming. It's overwhelming at times. But I now understand a lot of my life has nothing to do with me because it's not anything that I'm in control of. And there's just so little that I'm actually in control of. But I know what that is and I control it. Therefore, I am better. And that's the gift I want to give to my client. I mean, that is exactly the Kool-Aid I want him to drink. He's yet hit that place of when I control my mind, the byproduct of losing weight and feeling better is just going to help me solidify who I am and what I want. But when you're on the other side of the spectrum of that, it's hard to have that belief because you got to, you know, if you're working out, it's because, well, you have to believe that there's some sort of benefit going to happen. You know what I mean? I'm going to get stronger. You know, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to gain flexibility, mobility. You just don't work out going, yeah, I have no idea if this stuff works. It's uncomfortable and it's painful, but I'm just going to do it. So it's the same thing with working on your mind. You have to have this belief that, look, I'm going to control these things. I'm going to control this, and I'm going to really, really try to let go of that. That's a muscle. Little things done, little things done consistently, you're going to get better at that. So then we started talking about this blip he had. He had been on depression medication forever. And he ran out. Took him a couple days to get into the doctor. When he got into that doctor was talking about like switching the medication. He just kind of started freaking out. Like, you can't just quit medication cold turkey. And you just can't switch. You kind of got to wean off it. So he's like, I ran out. I need a refill. And, you know, he kind of hit this panic mode. And then he said, you know, it's like I'm addicted. And I don't want to be. He goes, I want to be in control of that stuff. You know, because the side effects of depression medication, it's just, you know, long term, this might be bad, that might happen. And it kind of, so it's like, well, again, here's this stuff. It's just sitting in your head, just rolling around, grinding, that you don't want in there. But you're not kicking it out. And I said, here it is. Control your weight, which means control your mind. You start controlling your weight, you start controlling your mind, you might be able to just not go without the medication. You might be able to get to that point where you start weak, but don't think about that. You know, and his father is obese and has real health problems. And I told him it's the great example because they were trying to, like, diagnose which exact thing he was suffering from so they knew which exact kind of thing to, and him, this father, their family, they were kind of frustrated. And I'm like, well, it's like you're worried about which campfire to put out when the inferno is, you know, you got to lose weight. You know, it's like, is it that medication? Is it that disease? I need to know. It's like, control how much you're eating, lose weight. You wouldn't have half the problems you would have if you were not obese. But you're obese and you're elderly, you're not going to get better. Ever. You're not. You're 80 something and obese? I didn't want to picture it. But I could say to my client, you know, there's your exactly what you don't want to see happen. You know, you're worried about this thing, you're worried about that thing, you're trying to run over there, you're trying to run over here. And you wouldn't have those problems if you weighed less. It's like just this, there is the arrow pointing to the thing that you need to do. And until you do that, you don't really need to focus on anybody else. So a quick lesson on efficiently. That's what I kind of believe my life is. I live efficiently. So I don't hang out with people I don't want to hang out with. I don't go places I don't want to go. I don't do things I don't want to do. As much time as I have left on this, you know, path, I want it to be my choice. When, how, who, all that stuff. And almost 55 now, I'm just going, okay, I'm just going to make these decisions quicker. Because it's kind of a decision that I'm making eventually, but why not just make them now? Save myself some time and energy. And that's been, you know, kind of the way I've been living. So if you show me who you are, I'm just going to believe you. I'm not going to get mad. I'm not going to get upset. But I'm not going to ask you why. And I'm not going to explain why I'm doing what I'm doing. It'll just be silence as I move forward, navigating my pro-you path. So I had this really cool puppy moment. Went into a puppy store, met Zen's doppelganger. Started chatting with the dude, single dude, just out of a relationship, lives in Hollywood, named Tommy. And I was like, oh my God. So we actually, you know, had this cool moment. I exchanged number, which I don't normally do. And I said I was going to follow up. And I had kind of a busy week with stuff. And so I waited about a week. And then the following week, which was last week, I reached out and I say, hey, you know, I hook up, got our dogs play. And he's like, I'm actually busy. I just moved. And I'm painting next week. And I said, well, if I come over, I help you paint in the dog's place. He's like, oh, that'd be amazing. So back and forth, a few texts. And I said, okay, we picked Tuesday. So I said, let's chat Monday, you know, confirm everything. So Monday came around. And I said, okay, cool. You know, I'll see you at that time. He's like, okay, cool. So I get up and, you know, we kind of always do our morning run walk. And then we chill for a couple hours. And it's like the next thing to do. And, you know, Zen's got a clock, internal clock, when we leave, what we do. So he gets in the car and he's like, okay, where are we going? And I'm like, well, I don't know if you remember. And I start mentioning, you know, his carrot name. And he just starts getting excited. And I don't know if he's really, like, remembering this dog, this name, this moment. But he's getting excited because we're just going somewhere. So I'm having trouble finding parking. I finally find a spot. I'm having really trouble finding the address. And finally, oh, it's like a big house. And there's a one address for the bottom and one address for the top. And they're on different fences, whatever. So I finally find it. But I was left early and, you know, had plenty of time, so I'm standing outside his fence. And I text him. I said, I'm here. Don't hear anything. So I call him, doesn't answer. And I leave a message, said I'm outside, was in. That was it. I just quiet. I started thinking, going, I'm not going to hang out long. You know what I mean? I'm going to leave. I don't really know this guy that well. And I went, okay, hold on. And that's how efficiently I automatically started. You know, start feeling. So I go, let me just, you know, he could be like on the way here, just running late. You know, he's driving, can't text, whatever. I go, let me just walk in around for a few minutes and maybe I'll hear from him. So I go to my car, grab Zen's leash and collar, and I just put it on, and I get a text. It's from Tommy. Hey, sorry I missed your call. In the shower at my old house, the guys, something about that we're going to work on the house today, can't. Sorry to not keep you in the loop. And then he sent me a second follow-up text, and it said, sincere apology. Things have been moving really fast. I'm finally slowing down. And I just went, delete. And I just like was going through the actions without even thinking. Just got in my car, started driving, and I'm like, I knew all the things I wouldn't do. I wasn't going to go, wow, I'm upset, that bummed me out. Or, hey, why did you? Or, why didn't you just You know, we just talked yesterday. Hey, this is my time. I'm in a place in my life where I don't. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to exert any energy. I'm just going to go delete and move forward. Because no one that I've ever associated with has ever stopped being them. It's like you met someone, you go out on a first date. That's kind of, they're really putting the foot, really trying to put, you know, their best foot forward. So I'm thinking, you know, you got this guy you just met. He's kind of a stranger, and he wants to come over and help you paint. And when you just forget, what I pick up is, hey, I got a lot of strangers wanting to help me to paint, so I don't really need to concentrate on them or be thankful for them because I have so many strangers wanting to help me paint that has a dog that gets along with my dog. Again, when you just show me who you are, I'm just going to believe you. I mean, if that was like, we're texting a bunch of times, all fired up, da 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 da, and you're like, whoop, totally, I'm like, got it. I'm not mad at you. I just completely don't even care anymore. It's like the dude I was mentoring, same thing. So you're giving me your free time, which you value more than the time that you're actually working, making money, and you're giving that to me. And I'm just not going to value it. Okay, bye. Phew, done. Living efficiently. Telling you what I'm doing, not what to do. But I am the best I've ever been. So, take what you want, take what works, apply it. So the installation that I'm doing this week, I'm totally pumped. And it's like this, you know, kind of like the hospice chat, you know. Like, I'll do it tonight. And then I'm so glad I had that much time. Well, I've probably put, I would say, about 8 to 10 hours of prep in thus far. And, you know, I go to Rincon. And it's, I would say, if I had to guess, like 5 flights of steps up the 1 stairs. So to go down, grab a bag of stones and come back up, it's kind of like, you know, like pretty good workout. Now I kind of do that right when I get there. I've done it a few times. Get to the beach, I'm like, Zen, we're gonna grab this bag, go down these steps, grab some stones, sand, come up, drop it off, grab our other bag, and then we're gonna head the other way down the beach and do our day. So those additional trips, that time, I'm watching it because it's like, this is why it's going to cost you this much money. So, at this one point, you know, I'm doing it for Hardwick, and he's like, hey, you should put some beach sand down. And I thought, wow, cut a hole in your yawn, fill it with beach sand. I'm going to lay down plastic first, but I'm like, it was just such a cool idea. I thought, real, you know, instead of doing it on, you know, dirt or gravel or whatever, it was like, you know, just the beach sand. So, again, went to Rincon, went down, I was going to grab, I just wanted one more big stone, and I, you know, walk around, find these perfect round stones, I can't say no, so I'm throwing them in the bag. So I got like 15, so X amount smaller stones in the bag. I find a big, cool stone, and I'm going to load up a couple bags of sand. So I bring the bag to the bottom of the steps, I bring the stone to the bottom of the steps, I got the 2 bags, I fill them up with sand, and I start laughing. I'm like, how am I going to carry this stuff up? I pick up the bag, and it's like 25 pounds. I pick up the stone, it's like 15 pounds. I pick up each bag, they're like 10, 15. I'm like, but bag on my shoulder, 1 bag of sand in my hand, other stone in my arm, and grab the other bag, and I start humping up the steps. And I'm like, man, I'm going to charge these people a ton. But it's like I'm really doing this thing that I'm like, the whole, I'm going, no one's doing this. No one knows where to get these stones. No one's going to come here and walk down, look around, you know, gather them, carry them back up, bring them anywhere. No one's doing this. And as far as stone balances, those people, like I know them, a bunch of them on Facebook, hundreds of friends. No one is doing the style I'm doing. that much in the United States. Not at all in California, not at all in LA. And no one is doing them in yards and gardens. That's a pretty good feeling. I'm pretty excited about that. So it'll keep coming up as I progress, because like I said, I'm doing it this week, and you know, I want to take a bunch of pictures, and I know I'm going to want to chat about it. But 5-year anniversary of the podcast coming up, and then I turn 55. It's not going on. So I'm just going to read some stuff. It's probably more than I read in a while. But the hospice thing, again, once the, you know, the idea of me was gone, what was left were those people and their loss, and they're still dealing with that loss. Nothing changed. I didn't take anyone's loss away that night. Yeah, I didn't fill that void for anyone. Jim still walks Rincon alone without his wife. It just lingered. And I was saying it lingered long enough for me to go, you know what, I'm just going to look up some stuff. So I got a few things I'm reading. Everyone grieves differently, whether it be through tears, pain, or anger. This was a couple, and they had this article. It said, for Dan, grieving involved learning to talk about the pain he was experiencing. The more detailed he was in expressing his pain and suffering in relationship to his losses, the easier it was for him to cope. Although grieving helped him deal with his losses, it still didn't take away the pain. But grieving did take him to a different place. It eventually brought him to a place of healing, to a place where joy became a part of his life again. The hidden gift in life in the process of grieving is being able to transition to that place where even though it still hurts, the memories also bring joy. Healing takes time. When hard situations invade our lives, we need to learn how to face and grieve our losses. This could be the loss of financial security, the loss of leisure time, the loss of dignity, the loss of career, the loss of relationships. The list could go on and on. Loss is an inevitable part of life in hard situations. And the grieving process, as difficult and painful as it is the means by which we can grow into a place of acceptance and healing. Many people to go through the grieving process first in order to heal, and others need people to come alongside them to help. Healing is a process. Because everyone grieves in different ways, they also heal in different ways. None of us can define the grieving process for another person. We can't prescribe a timeline for grief. We can't say how long it should take to mourn. We can't set standards for how another person expresses grief. We can't say that someone isn't grieving properly, but we can come alongside those who grieve and say, I can't imagine the depth of your pain, but I want to help and hope that I can be what you need me to be as you go through this. And then I went to Psych Central, and you know, I've been through some stuff, and you know, had the podcast a long time and heard bits and pieces, but I never looked up and actually read the 5 stages of grief, which are 1, denial and isolation, 2, anger, 3, bargaining, 4, depression, 5, acceptance. People who are grieving do not necessarily go through the stages in the same order or experience all of them. So it was funny because I thought, oh, wow. You know, I went to the hospice and I was kind of jotting down some notes. And I went, okay, well, here are the things that I think help you heal. And 1 was time, and 2 was acceptance, and 3 was moving on. And I'm like looking at it and I'm like, you know, I don't know. I just kind of like, I didn't look at this list to come up with my list, but I kind of like the things that I kind of came up with for my hospice speech. The stages of grief and mourning are universal and experienced by people from all walks of life across many cultures. Mourning occurs in response to an individual's own terminal illness, the loss of a close relationship, or to the death of a valued being, human, or animal. There are five stages of grief that were first proposed by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross in her 1969 book On Death and Dying. In our bereavement, we spend different lengths of time working through each step and express each stage with different levels of intensity. Contrary to popular belief, the five stages of loss do not necessarily occur in any specific order. We often move between stages before achieving a more peaceful acceptance of death. Many of us are not afforded the luxury of time required to achieve this final stage of grief. The death of your loved one might inspire you to evaluate your own feelings of mortality. Throughout each stage, a common thread of hope emerges. As long as there is life, there is hope. As long as there is hope, there is life. Many do not experience the stages of grief in order listed below, which is perfectly okay and normal. The key to understanding the stages is not to feel like you must go through every one of them in precise order. Instead, it's more helpful to look at them as guides in the grieving process. It helps you understand and put into context where you are. Please keep in mind that everyone grieves differently. Some people will wear their emotions on their sleeve and be outwardly emotional. Moi. Others will experience their grief more internally and may not cry. You should not try and not judge how a person experiences their grief, as each person will experience it differently. So here they are. Number one, denial and isolation. The first reaction to learning about the terminal illness, loss, or death of a cherished loved one is to deny the reality of the situation. This isn't happening. This can't be happening, people often think. It is a normal reaction to rationalize our overwhelming emotions. Denial is a common defense mechanism that buffers the immediate shock of the loss, numbing us to our emotions. We block out the words and hide from the facts. We start to believe that life is meaningless and nothing is of any value any longer. For most people experiencing grief, this stage is a temporary response that carries us through the first wave of pain. When I did the talk at the hospice, I did mention the two quotes from Byron Katie that I love. One is, "Whenever I argue with reality, I only lose 100% of the time." Second one is, "The only time we truly suffer is when our minds argue with reality, with what is." Very tough. Number two, anger. As the masking effects of denial and isolation begin to wear, reality and its pain reemerge. We are not ready. The intense emotion is deflected from our vulnerable core, redirected and expressed instead as anger. This anger may be aimed at inanimate objects, complete strangers, friends, or family. Anger may be directed at our dying or deceased loved one. Rationally, we know the person is not to be blamed. Emotionally, however, we may resent the person for causing us pain or leaving us. We feel guilty for being angry, and this makes us more angry. Remember, grieving is a personal process that has no time limit nor one right way to do it. Three, bargaining. The normal reaction to feelings of helplessness and vulnerability is often to need to regain control through a series of if-only statements, such as, "If only we had sought medical attention sooner. If only we got a second opinion from another doctor. If only we had tried to be a better person toward them." This is an attempt to bargain. Secretly, we make a deal with God or our higher power in an attempt to postpone the inevitable and the accompanying pain. This is a weaker line of defense to protect us from the painful reality. Number four, depression. There are two types of depression that are associated with mourning. The first one is the reaction to practical implications relating to the loss. Sadness and regret predominate this type of depression. we worry about the costs and burial. We worry that in our grief we won't have spent less time with others that depend on us. This phase may be eased by simple clarification and reassurance. We may need a bit of helpful cooperation and a few kind words. The second type of depression is more subtle and, in a sense, perhaps more private. It is our quiet preparation to separate and to bid our loved one farewell. Sometimes all we really need is a hug. Number five, reaching this stage of grieving is a gift not afforded to everyone. Death may be sudden and unexpected, or we may never see beyond our anger or denial. It is not necessarily a mark of bravery to resist the inevitable and to deny ourselves the opportunity to make our peace. This phase is marked by withdrawal and calm. This is not a period of happiness and must be distinguished from depression. Loved ones that are terminally ill or aging appear to go through a final period of withdrawal. This is by no means a suggestion that they are aware of their own impending death or such, only that physical decline may be sufficient to produce a similar response. Their behavior implies that it is natural to reach a stage at which social interaction is limited. The dignity and grace shown by our dying loved ones may be well their last gift to us. Coping with loss is ultimately a deeply personal and singular experience. Nobody can help you go through it more easily or understand all the emotions that you're going through. But others can be there for you and help comfort you through this process. The best thing you can do is allow yourself to feel the grief as it comes over you. Resisting it will only prolong the natural process of healing. Yeah, reading that, I just think about that. A hospice group, you know, what a great thing. You know, it's just a great community, you know. So just if you can find someone or two or three or a group just to chat with or just to sit and listen to, just a great way. I mean, it's, again, my number one was time. It is just dig that, grab it, embrace it. It is going to take time. So number two is, well, how are you going to deal with that time? Don't be alone. Don't keep things inside. Get it out. Share. Like I said, if it's just a friend, if it's just a couple friends, or if you can find a group. I dig the group thing, man. There's powers in numbers. And again, when I was in AA, and hour and a half I didn't think about my stuff, and an hour and a half I heard about really bad stuff, worse than I had. Every time I walked out, I felt better, so I kept doing it because I felt better. So I had wondered this. I mean, I have not had a spouse pass, but I had for my first dog, sister, girl I dated. But the divorce, I always wondered, and I kind of had, you know, not by any specific source or anything, but, you know, at one time I just, like, you know, divorce and grieving, like death takes, you know, 3 to 5 years. And I kind of remember hearing that, and I was at a year and a half, and I was like, made me feel good because I was kind of feeling okay, and I'm like, I'm ahead of the curve. It averages 3 to 5, and you know, so I wasn't saying or stating or quoting that, you know, divorce was the same loss, you know, to the same type of degree that death was. So Googled it. I got this from the Huffington Post. I've never been a widow. I can only imagine that it's horrible, otherworldly, incomprehensible. My logic tells me that the arduous process of reconstructing a life after widowhood is heavily dependent on the individual circumstances, your age, your spouse's age, your support system, your family, your finances, and whether or not you're prepared for the death. Of course, there's the nature of the relationship itself, which may be complex. And when there are children, the issues multiply. Though both my parents are now deceased, one died much too young, while the other died older and in her sleep. I know these losses to be a different matter, but I observed my grandmother after her husband's death. They shared nearly 50 years together. When he passed away suddenly, she was brokenhearted. Once I was acquainted with a woman who was mid-divorce when her husband died. She quickly transformed from unhappy participant in a drag-on fight to someone whose sorrow was to be respected. And by the way, her troubles were over. So why compare death to divorce? Dun-dun-tsh. What might we see if we actually do so? In death, we confront the finality of a loved one's passing. In divorce, though we don't generally wish our partners dead, we sometimes realize that life would be easier if that were the case. And those feelings add to our confusion, our guilt, and our difficulties in co-parenting. In death and divorce, we face the palpable destruction of the familiar, the destruction of marriage, the family home, and loss of self in the role of partner. The identity issue is heightened for women who must choose to keep or shed a married name. It seems to be that divorce twists our grieving in turns and in turns and term, we're mourning illusions and we confront regrets, perhaps a lack of generosity in the bedroom or an inability to tolerate a breach in vows. Self-esteem will take a hit. Legal battles may rage for years. Logistical nightmares, shuttling kids may wear us out. And friends, they're weary of our drama. Often they desert. And for the midlife woman left to raise children alone, where is the light at the end of the tunnel? What if she's juggling kids, job, and aging parents? What of a woman's greatest fear at 50, regardless of marital status, that she won't have enough money to just keep going? Man or woman, we're licking our wounds. We absorb blame and we place it. We relive matrimonial death in waves of unknown duration. None of this is to say that death is easier to survive than divorce. There may be years sacrificed to a loved one's sickbed, as well as medical bills, lack of insurance, and little means to generate income. Still, when contemplating widowhood versus divorce, I wonder why we demonstrate more compassion when it comes to the former, though the ghosts of the latter still walk the planet. Not my opinion, but interesting. And I don't know, I really enjoyed reading that stuff. Like, you know, I'm doing really good, you know, best time of my life, had a great summer. You know, the end of 2019 was wonderful. The beginning of 2020 is like the best ever. And I'm like all pumped. And I'm like, okay, why are you going to talk about this bummer thing? And I'm like, well, it's not a bummer thing unless you're going to call it a bummer thing. What it is reality. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, you can't, you know, palpable is a good word. Like, I can hang out with Jim and have fun and, how I met him, what we talked about, our first conversation, what that led to, where I spoke at, the people I spoke in front of. You know, that just is the biggest part of it. I mean, if Jim was like, hey, I take these pictures and I show them to my wife. Her name's Brooke. Bye, thanks. None of this would have happened. So, I don't know, it's like, it's not like, oh, well, I have to pay respect. It's not that, but in a way it kind of was. You know, I'm having a great year, everything's wonderful, I went and spoke at this hospice and I enjoyed it, okay, and then I went and, I don't know, not built like that. You know, this is like the easiest thing in the world is to do this podcast. And it was after the decision going, look, you don't know much. You know, you don't know a whole lot of people. You know, you don't know, you know, many more people to, you know, have as far as guests. And so you should just start, you know, like you're share in your journal. Walk the earth, have experiences, and share those experiences. Like, I mean, even if it was horrible. Like, I woke up this morning and brushed my teeth, and now I'm watching a movie. I'm walking Zen right now. You know what I mean? I would always, again, people would not maybe want to tune in, but you would always have something to talk about if you're just going to tell people what you did, what you're going through, what you're thinking, what scares you, what makes you smile, what fills you up, what challenges you. So like I said, you know, the best, there were just all these great moments in a straight line, not one better than the other. And then I hit the point when I was in the car and I was driving home and I was like, my speech is done. I gave the art. I shared. That was my message. I did my job as a messenger. Delivered the message. That's my purpose. Now I get to go be a dog owner. That was like the, that by far, that not by far, but that if I had to pick one, that was the best because it was just seeing everything. That's what I'm saying. It just really avoids the high highs and the low lows. I was just right in the middle going, okay, that's that, and here's that, and, well, there's a good, that's done, now I get to go home to Zen. And that's when it allows that, but, you know, you're still feeling this, the loss. You can't be in a room with those people and go out to dinner and not feel their loss. Like, you know, Jim's never, like, been a down guy once, not, like, somber anything. The night at the meeting he was, of course, but with me he never is. But you know he's walking with that loss. You can feel it. And being an empath... You know, I feel everything. I feel a lot. And so it's just like going, well, Tom, here's who you are. Embrace it. Okay. What do you feel? That. All right. We'll talk about that. Well, you don't really know when that's passed. Shut up. Voice in my head. So maybe this can help you understand someone who's grieving, or maybe it can help you who's grieving, or maybe you can look back on when you were grieving, or maybe it'll just prep you, because we can't stop what's coming. That's a fact. It's how we respond, and it will not be fun, and it will not be familiar, and it will not be comfortable, it will not be easy. And you will have to deem yourself worthy, or you won't move forward, and you won't move on. You can never recoup that loss, but you can move on, and you can move forward. You are worth it. Welcome to your pro-you moment. Let us begin to control that which we can. We can sit on the floor, fold our legs. We can have a neutral neck. Shoulders over your hips. Navel tucked into your spine. Now we will focus on our breath. We're going to draw the inhale through the nose, allow the exhale out the mouth. Slow it down. Elongate that breath. To do that, you'll need to focus your mind on your breath. What connects your mind to your body in this moment, making you present in this moment. That is what should be occupying the space between your ears. If anything else enters, calmly, quietly ask it to leave and return to your breath. Do this to the best of your ability for 180 seconds. I will let you know when time is up. You may begin now. Congratulations on a very successful pro-you moment. Very successful because you did it. Doesn't have to be wonderful, doesn't have to be perfect. Don't have to feel comfortable to be successful. Just check that little box. Did you do it? Yes, check. Yay, victory. That's what deeming your self-worth is all about. Because you don't know. None of us do. We don't know when it's our time. We don't know when that crash will occur. We don't know when that moment will happen. we get hit by that car when we're taken. And someone we love is gone too quickly. It's like one of the craziest things I started saying was like, I was like, okay to die now, because I just felt finally how I thought I could feel. And I'm like, man, if I get 50 more minutes, 50 more days, 50 more months, I'm going to pursue this. What? Feeling better. Why? Because we don't get time. We don't get it. I get to have bad days. I get to fall down. I get to do a not so popular podcast. I get to train not so many clients. I get to not have a lot of money. I get to not own a big fancy house. But I don't get time. But while you are here, one thing you are going to get is the pain of loss. And it is how you respond. And an 8 out of 10 is just going to respond better than a 6 out of 10. Come to my well by the water I sell. That's what I'm selling. An 8 out of 10 has bad days and has loss and grieves and cries. You can't stop what's coming. But you'll choose the right response. Peace and God bless.